This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright and Brock Rahm.
I can be convinced of anything if you make a strong enough argument.
Imagine being asked to redesign a website or start tweeting for a brand early in your career. Jess Smith says these opportunities started her down a digital path where she is today as the head of digital and brand strategy at Stuart Haas Racing. How would you begin to define digital strategy at a brand if you had a clean slate today? That's today's episode.
Do you want to go to time.is? Do a little clap?
Yeah. All right, I'm there.
Let's do 18. Right on the 1-8.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack, so if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Jess Smith is joining us today. She's the head of digital and brand strategy at Stuart Haas Racing. Welcome to the show, Jess.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to chat with you guys today.
We wanted to have you on to talk everything social. You've been a voice within the social media space, and I think one of the things that really stands out is just your willingness to share your insight and how you think about using social media within the greater content space. So let's just start with your background on how you initially got into sports. Is this something that you've always wanted to do growing up, is getting into sports and working in sports?
Yeah, I think like a lot of people, sports were always part of my life. I grew up in a household. My dad loved Kentucky basketball, NASCAR, and football. And so sports were always on. And then I was an athlete myself. So I did cross country and track and field and ran at Auburn University. And I feel like in college, even I was a little bit laser focused on my running. And I majored in mass communications, and I did an internship at the athletic department for a year. And so that kind of a crossroads, sports that had been my identity my entire life. And so I knew I wanted to carry that forward in my career somehow, but I didn't really know exactly what that looked like. I just knew I wanted to combine my love of sports with my love for writing and creativity and communications. And when I graduated in 2009, the job market was not great. So actually, I think I applied for like 300 jobs and couldn't get anything. Couldn't even get a job at like a doggy daycare that I worked at over the summer. Like, it was really awful. And so I finally am getting a full-time internship with a nonprofit called Athletes for Hope that connected charitable opportunities to professional athletes, but more on like the Olympic level. And that was sort of my first foray into sports. And then my first full-time job was with a nonprofit called the Atlanta Track Club. So it was a 14-person shop, second largest running organization in the U.S. And at the time, social was just getting started. So I was kind of the young one in the office. And I feel like they threw all things digital at me, which is how the story originally went. But it was awesome because being such a small organization, they had to entrust me with a lot of different things. So we went through a website redesign that I led with an agency, and I probably, looking back, had kind of no business leading. I remember buying a like Yahoo guide for how to write for the web, which is like, but that like opened me up to the world of digital and social. And I had so much autonomy there to kind of learn and like get my hands in every all kinds of different things. And that's where I was like, okay, I want to work in digital. I want to work in sports. And that's sort of how I kind of found a love for it.
That's so funny. I feel like my first job out of school is with the University of Nebraska. Same thing in the newly formed digital department. It was basically just like, here's some social media, like, I don't know, Twitter. I want to hear more about your background, but I do want to ask you, as somebody who's been in the digital space from the time you were and is still in it now, how much has that landscape changed? Like, what's the biggest difference between here was day one being a social strategist right back then to now at Stuart Haas Racing and how things have changed there?
That's a great question. I mean, gosh, in 2009, my first job, Twitter and Facebook were the two main platforms. And I don't even think you could share a photo on Twitter yet. So it was like, not to date myself, but it was so unsophisticated. And I feel like it was a true experiment. And a lot of my early roles in social, I was sort of this one man band. So I don't actually come from like a creative technical background. I would say like creative strategy, but I have no business designing things. But I remember my first couple of roles, like you were the community manager, the content strategist, you were creating the content. I remember just like the biggest hacks was finding creative apps where I could like edit photos and add text. And I look back in the old work and I'm like, oh my gosh, it was the creative now blows everything away. I think fast forward to today, like I feel like we're finally at a place where people have an understanding of what digital and social brings to the table. There's expectations that come with roles, both from a brand standpoint and then from a revenue standpoint. And teams are finally investing in true teams. So it's no longer one-man shops. People actually have roles in place. And I feel like everyone can dive a little bit deeper, hopefully, into their like area of expertise. And so it's great to see. I remember there used to be this time where people thought like social media roles would die and it would all kind of funnel into like one marketing. And I think it's promising to see how much it's grown and that we learn to really drive it back to the business.
When you talk about the strategy and what you do and how things have evolved over time, it sounds like you've kind of focused a lot more on the strategy side, given your lack of creative background. I guess in today's world, in your role today, what is it that strategy does that's different from like marketing?
Yeah, I think that digital, what I do is marketing. Digital is just the vehicle for how we do it. So I think like all great marketing starts with a big idea, right? Like let's say when I was at Under Armour, for example, and working on like big brand campaigns, every big brand idea started with like, every brand campaign started with like a big idea. Then my job is to take that big idea and what the goals are and figure out how to translate it to digital. So I think from like a digital strategy standpoint, it's one, like how does the brand come to life online? What's kind of that personality? Digital is the front door to brands today. So I feel like it's super important to be thinking about voice and tone. Two, like if depending on what audiences are we trying to reach and what's our channel strategy. So understanding like platform purpose, why we're on the channels that we're on, like if we're looking at emerging platforms, what platforms do we need to be on? What do we need to say no to? And then the content strategy is really about what are the brand pillars that we need to communicate? And then how are we doing that through our content vehicles? But I do think like at the end of the day, what we do is marketing. It's just taking it and molding it to the platforms, making it authentic to the channels where people live. Does that make sense?
I think that makes total sense. And kind of piggybacking off of that, you've been at a couple different places and done this. And I think so much of marketing and then digital strategy is knowing the brand and then knowing your audience, right? So what has been the biggest, out of the brands you've worked with, which has been the biggest challenge to kind of A, get to know that product, and then B, get to know that audience, and then fit those two things together in a social strategy?
I don't know if any of them is, they all have their own challenges in their different way. I think what is attracting me to Stuart Haas, and one thing that really excites me about the NASCAR space is it's pretty complicated when you think about it. So you have four different cars at Stuart Haas. So four different teams within one team, four different drivers, four different personalities. Every driver is a different sponsor. Sponsors are bread and butter. And so we're super focused on their storytelling. But at the same time, we need to focus on the Stuart Haas brand. And so there's a ton of moving pieces. And I think for a long time, and rightly so, NASCAR teams have invested in the sponsors and the drivers. But I think as the landscape is starting to shift, like Stuart Haas Racing needs to invest in the brand. Like you think about the Yankees or the Rangers, or, for the colleges that we went to, like if you ask a person what college they root for, let's say they say Auburn, like they have an emotional investment to that team. Same thing with like stick and ball sports. But on the NASCAR team side, like most emotional connection comes from the drivers, even the sponsors. And so like our challenge from a Stuart Haas standpoint is like, how do we make people care about Stuart Haas Racing as a brand? So if sponsors come and go or drivers come and go, there's always still that emotional connection. So that's one of the things that attracted me to the NASCAR landscape, was this really big opportunity to, one, tell our driver story, our sponsor stories, but then also help people build an affinity for the racing organization itself, not just drivers and sponsors.
Yeah, that's interesting. So as you are working directly with the different entities, the sponsors, the drivers, and trying to make sure that you're aligned, you just talked about all the moving pieces. It sounds like you almost have to do a lot more customization for a lot of the strategy that you're involved in. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I think that's one of the fun pieces about like, and it was been a really interesting surprise on the NASCAR side, is like no day is ever the same because you have so many different moving pieces. So even for like Kevin Harvick on the number four car, like one week you're working on a Busch activation, the next week you're working on a Unibet activation, and all of the partners, right, have different goals and objectives. And so our team is responsible for planning content and activations and supporting their larger goals around four different cars every week. And so it's like, it's this, which I think is a bit different than what you see in like MLB or NHL, because often if a partner comes on board, let's say, at the Rangers, you're selling a consistent kind of content franchise throughout the year that doesn't really ebb and flow. For us, every week is kind of a different storyline and partner objective. And it's, so it's like mini plans within kind of the larger plan. Does that make sense?
Definitely.
It's it's a different beast, but it's a good beast.
So how big is your team and how are you made up?
Yeah. So, we have two focused on the social side. We have a social and content manager who is focused on kind of high level strategy planning, working with our sponsors on the content plans, work briefing in kind of creative needs, and then a social coordinator who's responsible for day to day publishing, obviously helping with briefing, but more the pulse in the community. So, and then I obviously can flex in where they need from a social standpoint. So game day coverage, there's three of us that can really, race day coverage, sorry, there's three of us that can contribute kind of at any time. And then on the creative side, we have a graphics design manager, and then we also have some other external support on the graphics side, and then two shooter editors. And so it's nice because kind of creative and social all lives under one roof, which was really important for me in whatever role I took on next, because I've seen it so siloed throughout my career. And I think brand and social and content really need to be interconnected. And I think social and creative content especially like should not be two separate things. So it's really nice because we're all one unit, all growing together. All ideas come from everywhere. Small and mighty team, but it's been really great setup for us.
Kind of talked about that you are not a designer, right? But how much input do you have on the creative side? How much are you? I don't want to say the word dictating. I think dictating is the wrong word. But how much are you?
That word. Actually, tell the team you can. Yeah, that's actually one word that I had so funny. I banned that word. I hate that word.
I think influence might be a better word. How much influence do you have over the creative direction of the content in your role?
Yeah. So it sits. So creative direction sits with me, obviously working really close with our graphic design manager. He is incredibly talented. So he helps drive the vision and all of that. But at the end of the day, like I am and our team is responsible for the creative direction. And I think that's one thing, like, I don't like to play this game if I could do it all over again, because I don't think that's very fruitful. But if I could do it over again, I probably would have done some kind of minor, at least gotten some more basic knowledge of the graphics and video and production kind of art design process, just because it's so integral to what we do. Like, I've learned how to give feedback over time from really great bosses who have coached me and just from working with designers. But even if you don't go the actual content production kind of creative route, I think it's so important for someone in a strategy role to be able to speak the language and understand it. And also, right, like know the ins and outs and the frustrations of the creative process. So
you brought up another good topic there. In a creative world, it can be hard on both sides to receive criticism on creative content and then give criticism on creative content. What's your strategy on each side? You know, how do you tell people to develop a method to receive and internalize criticism? And then how do you go about delivering that criticism to your team?
Yeah, it's hard, right? I think even like social is subjective. So I think whether you're in a social role or a creative role, like the work that we do is subjective. I think the first rule is like feedback is not personal, right? Like I think working in sports, we're all emotionally invested in the work. That's only natural. But I think the first thing is to always keep in mind, like feedback is not personal. I think the second thing is like feedback should always be a dialogue. Especially knowing that the work is subjective. When I'm giving feedback, I always try to give the why. So I never just want to say, I don't like that, right? Like, that's not a productive, productive feedback. Like no one wants to hear that.
Well, and you're only one of however many and representing your audience, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's so important to, so I think taking out the personal piece of it too, and really understanding kind of what was the objective of this piece? What are we trying to do? Like if there are certain things from a brand perspective, we always look to, and always articulating the why and when you're giving feedback, but also making sure that it can be an open dialogue. So one of the things with our team here is like, everyone has a voice. Everyone should feel like they can speak up. We should be able to debate. At the end of the day, once we make a decision, we make the decision, we move on. But I think feedback is a two-way street. And just because I give feedback on the creative side, doesn't necessarily mean it's right. If you have somewhere you need to push, like let's push, let's debate it. But then once you make that final decision, we just got to go and move.
You're right up my alley there with that answer. That was great. I think I'm going to pick on John a little bit here, Justin. So Justin has an employee who used to work not under me, but adjacent to me at Notre Dame. And he would always come to me asking for feedback on his pieces because he knew I had editing experience and storytelling experience. And I would add, there'd be something awkward or something would feel weird in a cut. And I'd say, why did you make this cut? And he would say, because it looks cool. And I said, that's not an answer. Right? Yeah. You can convince me of an answer, but it can't be because it looks cool or because I couldn't think of anything else. Right. So I think it's very similar. I always talk about, or we always talk about on the spot is editing with intention, right? And having intent behind your cuts and edits. And it seems like you're in a similar way where this is, you know, this is design with intent. This is deliver with intent. And what is that intention behind it? Because I think you're spot on. I can be convinced of anything if you make a strong enough argument, right? But that argument can't just be, I don't know, or because I think it looks cool. It's like, I don't know if that's a strong enough argument.
Yeah. And I think you also made the point, like, it's also hard because we're often not our audience. And so I think for anyone, whether you're the one giving feedback or receiving feedback, like always have to keep that top of mind. And that's probably the hardest. That's probably the hardest thing for any marketer is realizing like you, even for us that love sports, like we're often the diehards and the diehard probably isn't your audience. Like they love everything that we do. They're the easy ones.
So how do you step out of that role when you're evaluating a piece and put your biases aside with your internal knowledge and your bias to evaluate a piece on the same level as your general fan base?
Yeah. So it's actually interesting for me. Like the last couple stops that I've gotten to a point in my career where I like the business of sports more than I like sports. Love sports. They'll always be a part of my life, but, I didn't know much about NASCAR walking into this role. So I feel like the last couple stops I've been, I have not necessarily been a diehard fan, which has allowed me to kind of come into the sport and the role, understand what makes people interested in it from like a new perspective and kind of look at it from a completely different lens. So like if I was working at Auburn and Auburn football, like I would have to take off my diehard hat. But for me, my last couple of roles, I wouldn't say that I've been a diehard fan, which has kind of helped me, I think, be able to kind of take a step back and think about things from more of a newbie or a business standpoint, if that makes sense.
100%. I It's interesting to hear you say that, because when people reach out to me and are like, oh, I'm such a huge fan, I want to work with you, I'm like, that's actually not something that I necessarily want to hear. Yes. So how do you look at that? Because we getting hired is episode that we did earlier on is one of our most listened to episodes. So I think there's always people that are interested in hearing different perspectives on how people approach what they look for when they're looking to hire people.
Yeah, I think you're spot on though. For someone that is like, if you are trying to sell yourself to any hiring manager, their first line should not be, I'm a huge fan, because there are so many fans out there. Your first line should be what you can bring to the table from a creative, content, social, business perspective. I think every team should be balanced, right? I think it's you want people who understand the ins and out of the sport, because that's important. But I also think it's great to have fresh perspective. So I'm never going to, especially when it comes to hiring, like, I don't think that you have to fit in a certain box as far as being like a fan and knowledge of the sport or not knowing as much. To me, it's more about like your desire to learn, how you can get feedback, like the skill sets you bring to the table. I do think teams should be balanced. Like here, we have a really nice blend of people who have been completely ingrained in the sport and some people who like me, who are totally new to it. And it's nice because then we get that balance and kind of the push and pull. But if you're coming to me and you're saying, I want this job because I'm a fan, if that's your only selling point, I'm going to move on. And I think, look, like, I think at the end of the day, like, sports are a business. And if you are so passionate about, you know, if you only want to work in sports because you love sports, like, I think it can set you up for disappointment, because especially working in the creative field, like, it's a business. It can be a grind. Hopefully it's changing, but and there are certain things that you have to do. And I think I've kind of come to this place in my career where I think you like I've thrown away this notion of like a dream place to work. I used to have like, I wanted to work at Nike. Like that was like a dream job. And I think when you have these high expectations for a place, like, oh, I love, you know, I root for Patriots. I've always wanted to work with the Patriots. When you walk into an organization sometimes, and I don't know anything about the Patriots, this is not, but like there's politics or there's nuances or there's, you know, it is a business, and you can't always, I think it can stifle that passion if you're not realistic, if that makes sense. So I think fandom can sometimes get in the way.
Yeah, that makes sense. Can we talk a little bit about your day-to-day role a little bit more in depth? We touched on a little bit earlier how you've talked about working with different sponsors and different drivers, that your week really changes. Can you give us a sense of what your workload kind of looks like in a given week?
Gosh, it sounds cliche. I would say that, you know, like I said, no day is ever the same. I'm at a point in my career where it's less about kind of tactical things for me. And I almost feel like I'm kind of this is a bad analogy, but like a coach for the team. So like I actually spend a lot of my time like from a management standpoint, like making sure my team like has what they need to be successful, like meeting, brainstorming with them, like setting up overarching goals and objectives for the week. And then I'm lucky to have a really great team who kind of runs with the tactical plans and the ideation and driving things forward. But for us, like, there's a couple of things that we're trying to do from a team standpoint. So one, our team is responsible for like championing the brand. So how is Stuart Haas Racing coming to life on our channels? We're working on defining like a brand strategy, which hasn't been in place before. So responsible for building, we're going to be building out a full brand playbook that talks about who we are as an organization, what we're looking to do, and really focusing on our voice and tone. So that's kind of one pillar for us. We're also responsible for supporting our partners. So we have a fantastic marketing partnership group that manages all of our cars and our partners. And our team obviously supports them from an activation standpoint, week over week. And then we also help from a sales standpoint. So our sales team, if they're doing any type of pitches, they need ideation, they need creative and content support, like our team will help with that. So it's kind of three different pillars. And no week is the same, because like I said, partners activate differently week by week based on their roles. But I think like that's the thing that's different about this role is it's brand strategy. So that's a big part of it. It's partner support, it's sales support, it's all the creative needs within the organization. And it sounds cliche, but like no week is ever the same just because of how much everything rotates.
So you touched on a little bit there, like being the coach and overseeing and setting your team up for success. How do you approach bringing content to the team and starting the process or ideation, and what's your approach there?
Yeah, brainstorming is hard. I actually would love if you guys have had like success. Would love to hear like on from a brainstorm standpoint. So our whole team started in the week of Daytona this season. So the entire social and creative team was new as Stuart Haas. And we also were the week of Daytona 500. And that made it a bit of a challenge because the season had started and we literally were thrown to the fire and we had no plan when the season started. I believe, especially in sports, teams that are the strongest plan for what they can plan for, right? Like the unexpected is always going to happen. You need to be able to maximize those moments. But if you haven't done the foundational work and you haven't planned for what you can actually plan for, then it's really hard for you to be buttoned up and like flex and make the most of those moments that kind of come up. So we're actually starting 2022 planning right now. And for us, like the 2022 planning, it's more about the content around Stuart Haas and the brand. Because we've gotten really good, I think, at like the sponsor initiatives and the race week activations. But because we're sort of living week to week right now, just with the way we all started this season, it hasn't really allowed us to kind of take a step back and say, okay, what are the storylines we want to tell from a brand standpoint? What's important for us? What do we need to communicate? And how do we create those kind of consistent franchises throughout the year? So we're kicking off 2022 planning. We've built like a social and content playbook that has sort of our content pillars that we want to speak to. And then we're actually going to do, I like bringing in a bunch of different voices from a content planning perspective. So we're going to be doing a content franchise brainstorm for 2022. Everyone in our marketing partnership group, sales, account management, social creatives invited to the brainstorm PR. We'll go through kind of a high level, like what we're looking to do from a brand standpoint, and we'll break into smaller groups, throw all of the ideas, you know, at the wall, and then kind of pull them down. But I think that good ideas come from anywhere. And so the biggest thing that I've learned is, one, when you brainstorm, give people a heads up. So because some people need time to think. So I always like to give people an idea what they're walking into, even maybe creating a Google Doc ahead of time so people can dump some ideas to get the conversation going. But then open it up to just beyond our team, because everyone has content ideas. Everyone has ideas that can come from all places. So I like kind of opening it up and getting a bunch of different perspectives kind of rolling. Brainstorming's tough though.
I was just going to say, I think there's another tough aspect of brainstorming too, which is it's kind of easy sometimes to settle into that brainstorm phase and then never make the cut over to the execution phase. How do you make that cut over, and when do you decide, okay, the brainstorming's over, and then how do you plan for your execution afterwards?
Yeah, I think that's where getting ahead is a huge piece of it. So for us, like, because partners are priority. Like that's our number one thing. If we don't take care of our partners, we can't take care of anything else. So for us, especially from a general content perspective that is not related to partners, getting ahead is key for us. So the goal, we're brainstorming in a couple of weeks. The goal is that we're far enough ahead that once we have this list, we'll be able to come up with a production timeline of how we want to execute and why. And the goal is to kind of look at NASCAR season is long. I mean, you have like basically 2 months of an off. It's basically the whole year. So we'll be able to map out the whole year, like what we're looking to do from a franchise perspective, and when we need to shoot things. So I think it's just about getting ahead and prioritizing. I know that sounds like, it seems like, oh yeah, that sounds so, it seems so basic, but, and I also think it's like, sometimes I think we just wait too long from a content perspective. Like we have things that are evergreen enough. Like we have this franchise, like in racing, there's a lot of nicknames. So in our organization, like we have nicknames all over: Ace, Bear, Old Man. Like some people don't even know people's real names. So we have this idea to do like a franchise nicknames of Stuart Haas Racing. Well, we can capture that all in one day. Like have a whole production day. Everyone rotates in for 3 hours and edit those in the off season, but then we can hold those to go all year. And I think it's just about being really focused and diligent about maximizing your production time and prioritizing, probably.
I actually think people do more brain dumps than they do brainstorms.
Yeah. What do you mean by that?
It's like everyone comes with preconceived ideas or notions, and it's not approaching it so that you're trying to solve a problem. It's this is what I think would be good content kind of thing.
Yeah. And that's why I always feel like going into a brainstorm, especially like it was important for us to develop kind of our playbook before we actually have a brainstorm, because the playbook gives a guide into like what we should be thinking about from a content perspective and why. So content for the sake of content, like I don't really do. It's all about prioritizing. Like there's so much stuff that you can create, but it's like the conversation we had earlier, it's like, why are we creating? What purpose does it serve? And social is meant to be fun. So it doesn't always have to be rocket science, but like there should be a purpose to it.
Yeah. I gotta go back and give John some props, Brock. He's come a long way in that regard.
and that's why I'm fine with picking on John, because I know how good John is now. Not because of my doing, because of his own. He seeks out that feedback and gets it, you know. But yeah, he's great now. Don't tell him I said that. But
a couple weeks ago, with Facebook and the Instagram fiasco where they went down, how do you approach your owned and operated channels versus, you know, the organic versus paid conversation?
It's definitely, so that's going to be a priority for us for 2022. I would say that our focus this year has been a lot on more of the social organic channels, but moving into more integrated approach. We even think about sponsor inventory. Like, so we're trying to build out plans. All of our partners have different goals and objectives. Like, it's important for us for all channels to work together, from web to email to social. I think it's a work in progress for us. But I think one of the things that people underestimate is how hard content distribution is in order to do it right. And I think that it, like, you have to work hard to make sure content gets its due. Organic reach on social is not, you know, what it used to be. So making sure that all platforms fall on cylinders, that includes email, that includes website, I think there is an immense value in that. And I think it's something that we'll be focusing on for 2022.
What do you think are the biggest challenges that people don't understand when it comes to distribution?
Oh, that's a good question. So I think packaging content is a big challenge. So video is kind of a good example. Like video content takes a long time to produce. Like, it can, like longer or bigger form pieces, and being able to make content work really hard for you, I feel like is key. And so it's not just, I think you can take a kind of a easy approach where you just take a few snippets let's if you're doing like a long form piece, few video snippets, push them out, call it a day. But I think like the teams that do content distribution really well think about how it should be molded to the platforms and figure out how to repackage stuff. So let's say you have like YouTube as a priority, and you have like this round table video with players, and it's more of them sitting around kind of like podcast style, right? Talking, telling stories, like super entertaining for the YouTube audience and for the diehards. But maybe from a visual standpoint, if you see talking heads just sitting around, it's not that interesting. I think the teams that do it well say, okay, what are the really interesting tidbits here, and how can we repackage for platforms? If it's Instagram, for example, you know, talking heads don't work well there. Can we take and create like a cool graphic or cool carousel that like actually shows maybe action shots of these guys, but breaks down some of the tidbits that they had? Like, it's about maximizing what you've created and making sure it gets its due. And I think like repackaging is the key, and it's not easy to do. it takes a lot of work to do it well.
You just mentioned that the organic numbers aren't as good as they used to be. How do you approach then like a pay strategy? And is that where a lot of the sponsorship elements come in?
I think when you're thinking about from a sponsor standpoint, especially if certain KPIs you have to hit, like including a paid strategy step, so you'd be part of it, even just boosting your content. I think it all depends on like what are the partner's goals and objectives. But for us, like especially with big moments, like boosting content is important because in order to get more reach and impressions, like you're going to maximize by putting paid behind it.
I've always kind of been of the opinion that organic, I mean, for content to perform, that it has to be organically well received first.
Yes. Yeah. I agree with that. It's a good test for how things can perform. I think especially in sports, like it's funny because at like an Under Armour, for example, like paid media is obviously a huge part of what they do because it's product too. So the whole performance marketing group, but even when you're thinking about like big brand campaign launches, like paid is driving the majority of it. And I feel like sports almost, because people have such an emotional connection to what we do, and we're really fortunate to have these engaged audience, like paid hasn't really been thought about, but I think that the importance of that is only can continue to grow. My biggest thing when you think about it, like, you have a whole team working on all these creative assets and all the hours that go into it. And even for a post to do really well, organically, I feel like for the hours and time that went into it, like is one organic post across Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, really giving that content its due. And the nice thing about social from a paid perspective is you don't have to spend all that much to get more visibility, especially if the content, to your point, is good. And so I think like, especially from a team perspective, if you're investing in creative and you're investing in production, you're investing in content, like paid media budget should be part of it. It doesn't have to be crazy, but even just testing to figure out like how much more impressions and engagement it can get for you. And if audience growth is important too, like we also end up talking to a lot of the same audience, like paid can play a role in that.
So has your time at Under Armour influenced like more of an agency sports brand influenced how you have approached social now that you're back in working directly for teams?
Yeah, I loved my time at Under Armour. I think that was like a very pivotal stop for me because it forced me to think differently. I was around so much different leadership who come from all different kinds of background, agency, big brand, you know, sports. And the thing that's so different about a place like Under Armour is product is really driving the timeline. So sometimes, I mean, you're planning year and a half in advance for a product launch. And so it was such a brand was so core to what we did, and planning and communicating and collaborating was a big part of it. Like it 100% shaped how I think, how I approach things. And especially from a team perspective, like, and you have to think people are getting there, but I don't know if sports teams have invested in their brands the way that like a Nike or an Under Armour has, right? Like what's the actual brand story, like the DNA? I'm not talking about the scores and the highs and the lows, but like what separates this baseball team from the next baseball team? And I think like Under Armour definitely helped me grow from like a brand strategy perspective. And all that was just because the leadership that I was around was incredible. So it goes back to the thing that I think sports teams for so long, like people just have a natural affinity to them. So we almost like, I don't want to say we take it for granted a little bit.
You posted something about content versus assets. did you already cover this as part of like your answer when we were talking about how you would take content and make it specific to a certain channel? Is that what you mean by that? Or is there something else?
So I think every answer day to everything is like, let's make content, right? It's like, we need content on X, Y, and Z. And for me, I think that every creative piece that is created is not necessarily content. Like, let's take, for example, if you have, okay, let's say you guys are launching a jersey launch. I'm just going to try to see if I can walk through this. and you're trying to brainstorm different ideas around how to tell the story around why this jersey is so important. Like if you have video, big ideas, things that conceptual have a story and actually have a like more of a creative purpose, like I would see consider that content. Let's say if you're just trying to straight up do jersey sales and you've created a jersey's on sale now, like that's not content. That's just an asset. You just need an asset created to promote a jersey. So it's kind of a little bit of a nuance, but I think like sometimes people overuse the word content. To me has more depth. And an asset is more of just a simple, like, we just need X, Y, and Z. Like it's.
Get it done, know, get that, it out.
Yeah. And also like not, I don't know. I think we've just, I don't think everything either needs a whole, people also, I think, overuse the word strategy and plan. Like not everything is a strategy. Sometimes you just have like a simple plan around it, if that makes sense. Like video, like people always overuse video. Like not everything needs to be a video.
Is there a mistake that you've made that, or that you learned from that you can laugh about now?
Oh. Yeah, I think, I mean, we've all made a ton of mistakes. I think even early on, like I remember this was actually at my first, like my internship that I had, we communicated a lot with different organizations and athletes and partners. And I sent an email to a ton of people. I mean, it was like, I was a ton of our partners and athletes. And had a ton of typos in it. And I remember, like my boss pulled me in and he printed out the email and had it like highlight all over. And I've like, writing is one of my stronger points. I think it just moved like way too quickly. And like, it was, seemed like at the time it was like a rush deal. And I remember he was like, you have to slow down. You have to X, Y, and Z this. I feel like I've been fortunate to like not have anything like hugely that just sticks with me today, but I think like all small things. And I think the thing that I've kind of learned into my career, like it doesn't matter if it's like big or small, the attention to detail always matters. And so pausing, always having a second set of eyes, like always thinking through things, knowing how to over communicate, not being afraid to always have someone review something, right? If you've been looking at something for so long, like always having other people kind of review is key. I don't know. I haven't had like, I've been fortunate. I haven't had like any of those like social horror stories where I actually share something on the wrong account or anything like that. I think my stuff has been more like kind of in the office coaching, if that makes sense, like small things, like how to write an email, like how to speak up in meetings, like how to do all of that. Like that's kind of where I feel like I've pushed and grown, but I haven't had any like crazy, I don't know, social gone wrong stories, thankfully.
And what about advice for people who want to get into and do what you do today? What would you tell them, as whether they're just getting into it or they're manager level and you know, wanting to get to where you are?
Yeah, I think for people that are just looking to get into sports, so if you're a student now, getting as much experience as you can, I think is key, like internship experience. I'm amazed at how much experience college students have now coming out of school. Like it's incredible. So I think like that's first and foremost. But then if you're about to graduate, recently graduating, or still looking to get your break in sports, I would say to not close any door. So it kind of goes back to what we talked about, dream jobs. If like everyone has this notion of what a dream job is, but I really believe that my first job out of school wasn't with a small nonprofit, I probably wouldn't be where I am, because I actually got to dig into a lot of digital projects early on and kind of learn the space. Whereas if I was at a big brand, like I wouldn't be going through a website redesign and managing the channels myself. So I would say it's really about making the most of where you are and getting the most technical experience that you can. And while you're doing that, trying to build some relationships in person or online to kind of bridge that connection. But I wouldn't get frustrated if your first job out of school isn't, or first couple isn't with a professional sports team. I think it's really about trying to get experience where you are, making the most of it, and building those bridges. it's funny because I think when people talk about wanting to work in sports, it's often wanting to work for a professional sports team, but there are so many different opportunities. And so like, do your research and understand there's agencies, there's brands that have sports marketing divisions. There's obviously the team side, there's a college side, and I would expand the scope because I think the one thing that's benefited me well in my career is being open to moving, not saying no to opportunities, and not being afraid to kind of cast my net wide. Like there's a lot of the jobs that I've had, I never thought I would have. It wasn't like jobs that I pinpointed. And so I feel like being open has served me really well. And then I think for like people that are in kind of the middle management part of their career, especially in social and in creative, like getting comfortable getting yourself on the tactical playground. Because eventually if you want to move into like a management role or a leadership role, like you've got to be able to pull yourself out of the weeds. And that's hard because, right, like publishing and being in the community and all of that is, it's fun. It's what makes it, what makes the job bright and shiny. But I think in order to be able to move up, you have to think about, you have to lean more into the strategy side, the business side, and the management side. And that means like pulling yourself out of kind of that tactical piece that that is often why you love the role.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.